being a good interviewer means being a good listener, but being a good interviewer also means really knowing your audience. I think the reason my podcast works is because
welcome back to another episode of Inside the Inspired. Today, we are here with a highly qualified individual, someone that I've appreciated their portfolio of work from afar, and that I'm very fortunate to actually have the first time speaking with today. This individual is as educated as they come, whether it's going through Princeton or teaching at Georgetown Law. This human is looking to add value to the lives of everyone, but namely lawyers and law students, and has found a way to carve out a particular expertise and specialty in how to make the law palatable. And that is something that I have definitely appreciated from this human. I'm so excited to introduce my new friend, Professor Mr. Jonah Perlin. How are you today, sir?
I'm great. Thank you so much for that warm introduction and for having me on. You know, one of the crazy parts about starting your own podcast is you get really good at asking the questions, and it's really fun, but also a little bit intimidating to be on the other side of the mic. So I'm glad to do it with someone as warm and gracious as you, and I'm sure our conversation will be fun.
I'm looking forward to it. And the one thing that I left out of the introduction is that you are the host of the How I Lawyer podcast. And I think that an opportune place to start would be to educate the audience a bit around what's your mission.
Sure. So the How I Lawyer podcast is a podcast where I interview lawyers from across the legal profession about what they do, why they do it, and how they do it well. And before I sort of dive into what the mission is, I think it's important to know the backstory, or a little bit of the backstory behind starting the podcast. And, you know, there was a joke that everyone started a podcast during the pandemic. It was like everybody learned how to bake sourdough bread and they started their podcast. I was no different. I learned how to bake sourdough bread and I started a podcast. Thankfully, it's still going. But for me, the impetus behind that podcast was my day job is I teach first year legal practice, what some folks call legal research and writing, at my alma mater, Georgetown Law. And during the pandemic, all of my students were taking the class remotely, many of them from their, you know, parents' basements. I mean, it was a grim time to be a junior lawyer. And I kept hearing from my students that they had no opportunity to learn about what it meant to be a lawyer. What I like to say is that one of the great parts about being a lawyer is you can do almost anything with the degree. But one of the most challenging parts of being a lawyer is that you can do almost anything with the degree. And so people asked me, you know, how can I network? How can I learn about the profession when I'm stuck at home and when there's no opportunity for me to go to conferences or even go to lectures at my school? And at the same time, I personally was looking for something to fill my cup a little more and give back a little bit more. And that's why I started the podcast, was an opportunity to use individual lawyers' stories that I'm allowed to sort of help share and cultivate by trying to ask good questions and create a library over time where for free law students and junior lawyers can listen at scale to a new lawyer's story, a new lawyer's path, a new statement of what that kind of lawyer does every day. At that point, it was every single week. And I decided I was going to do 50 episodes in 2021. I don't know why I decided that. The only thing worse than deciding that was saying it publicly. And I'm a big believer, if you promise something, you got to deliver. And so I did it the first year, and I'm just about to finish up year three with over 125 episodes. And we're just about to hit 250,000 downloads. It's being used in law school classrooms across the country, and it's helped people get jobs and figure out what kind of lawyers they want to be and where they fit in the profession. So that was the purpose, and that's what I've been trying to do these last 3 years with the podcast.
I got the chills as you were talking about it in terms of How I Lawyer, right? It's such an all-encompassing title where, like you said, one of the most intimidating and exciting aspects about lawyering in general is that everyone can do it differently, and everyone has all these different types of stories around how they've taken their education and implemented it. And looking at your prime example, right? you have a podcast with hundreds and hundreds of thousands of downloads, hundreds of episodes, and all those conversations, I'm sure, have upgraded your mental software and enhanced it in a way that helps shape your worldview. So the next place I'd like to go with the conversation is, you know, you have this wonderful mission and all these people that you've inspired. How have those conversations, how have those conversations shaped your view of lawyering in the 125 different attorneys that you've interviewed?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question, and clearly comes from somebody who knows their stuff and knows the power of this medium, which is podcasting, sort of on the small scale, or the medium of just sharing content more broadly on the internet. You know, people do it because they want to share the wisdom of their guests, because they want to create content. But you're absolutely right. And I can say that my experience has really shown this to be true. I've learned more from this experience and from the opportunity to spend literally 100 hours with people who I know. Some of them are my closest friends, but also people who I don't know or who do areas of practice that I know absolutely nothing about. And so I feel like my own worldview has expanded significantly, which makes me, frankly, a better law professor. It makes me a better person. It allows me to connect with people on a pretty deep level. I mean, sometimes people finish the interview and they're like, wow, I feel like I haven't ever told someone my story. That was like, you know, therapy almost. And so for me, having those conversations, you're absolutely right, I have grown immeasurably. You know, I have taken a lot more nuanced positions than I would have before, because I think, you know, and I was, you know, about 10, 12 years out of law school when I started this podcast. And I feel like at that point, I sort of had enough in my own experience that I felt like I was ready to give advice and ready to share. And I think I've learned a little bit of humility that my experience isn't shared by everybody else. And by listening and hearing those stories, I've changed my mental mindsets. I've changed the advice I give to my students, and I've grown a lot. And so I think it's just a good reminder that having conversations, especially with people who aren't in your closest circle, can really expand. Having conversations that have a purpose, right? I started with, my podcast is about teaching about what lawyers do, why they do it, and how they do it well. That driving purpose to our conversation means that I get to each time, I liked your metaphor of software, like upgrade my software, or to use another tech metaphor, like build my my large language model or my ChatGPT to be more sophisticated, because I've heard different stories. I've also, frankly, on a meta level, I took a bet that you can learn this stuff by talking to people about their story. And I believe that so much more today. I think you can learn so much by listening to people's process from their own experience and from their own words. And I hope that listeners get even 10% or 1% of what I get from having the conversations.
What does it mean to you to have as many downloads and listens as you do per episode? Because what's unique is it's a finite amount of episodes, right? And just quickly, roughly doing the math, around 2,000-ish per episode. That's a lot.
Yeah. We're at about 1,500 to 3,000 downloads per episode. And in the podcast space, as you say, I didn't know it was a lot, frankly, because as you know, like podcasting is yeah, podcasting algorithms are terrible. One of the people I sort of follow online is a guy named Jay Klaus, who is a creator and does a lot of content creation and talks about two creators. And one of the things that Jay likes to talk about, and I think it's really true, is that podcasting, among all of the various forms of sort of social media or social media adjacent media, is both the most rich because it's often long form and deep discussion and back and forth, but it's the least discoverable, right? The technology is very old. It's not like the YouTube algorithm. It's not like the LinkedIn or Twitter algorithm. People listen and people find podcasts because other people told them about it. And so it's a lot slower growth. I didn't get into this for downloads, and I really mean that because I didn't get into this as a moneymaker. Frankly, if I think if I added everything up, I am definitely down financially from this podcast in terms of bank account. But in terms of experience, as I said before, I mean, I'm immeasurably richer. So what does it mean to me that all these people are downloading it? It means two things. One, it means that the bet I took 3 years ago that the profession needed an opportunity for people to share their stories and people can learn from those stories, that bet, and it was a small bet, frankly, I could have stopped after 5 episodes. I didn't, but I could have. That bet was right. The second thing it's taught me is that we as a profession, the legal profession, need to do a much better job sharing. I think people sometimes go online and they think, oh, why would anybody want to hear about my experience? Or, oh, Jonah already has a podcast, or, oh, Brad Harden already has a LinkedIn profile. And it's like the need for this is so much greater than the content we're providing. And law is a profession of passed down wisdom. It is a profession that was traditionally taught through an apprenticeship model. We don't teach law through the apprenticeship model, but we still need some of the tools that the apprenticeship model provided just for a more modern era. So the downloads to me tell me it's hitting a point where people want it and it's providing value. And my North Star is trying to provide value for the audience I care about. And so I'm going to keep trying to find new ways to do that, but the podcast allows me to do that week in and week out, which is awesome.
And with all that responsibility that you have acquired through, like you were saying, this immeasurable wisdom, it puts this burden almost, right? Where you set the bar on each episode and then it becomes like, how can I make this better? Mm. I imagine, right? Because I think something else, and pardon me if I'm divulging anything, I'm not trying to, we could edit this out. I think you're doing some in-person content now, if I'm not mistaken. What's been the trajectory through, you know, starting out this, we'll call it a passion project, as you said, it's not necessarily a moneymaker yet. How, like, what's that trajectory, that experience been like going from a thought to virtual to now in person?
Yeah, well, you know, I should say, I just did my first in-person episode recently, and it felt kind of like my first episode that I did remotely, in the sense that it was brand new to me, and I had to deal with technology and audio levels and praying that I was going to ask the right question, except the only difference was I had a bunch of people looking at me while I did it. You know, the trajectory, the benefit of podcasting, because people often ask me like, oh, I'm thinking about starting a podcast. Like, is that a good idea? My view is the barrier to entry to starting a podcast is as close to zero as possible. Like we each have a, you know, podcasting mic, but you can literally do this with your iPhone. And if you can get people, if you want to do an interview style podcast, get people who are interesting people. My suggestion is I started with people in my own network and then the network of my network, because I knew my network was naturally sort of a smaller circle than it was, than what I wanted. And I just took each episode as a small bet on this process. And there are differences in episode 125 than episode 5. I think I'm probably better at asking questions and listening, but sometimes I listen back to those early episodes and I am so inspired by how excited I was, right? Like the just sheer energy of those first few episodes really make them special, and they were with incredible guests. And so, yeah, there's this idea, like we're all type A perfectionists in the legal profession, not all of us, but a lot of us. It's something, frankly, I'm working on being more cognizant of, because I also have a day job. I have research responsibilities. I try to be an active member of my community. And most importantly, I'm a dad to two elementary school age girls. That's my number one job in life right now. And so, you know, it can't just be more, more, more. And so I need to be, and I've been trying to be, as intentional as possible. The way that I have found to do that is by taking small bets. So not saying I am going to do all of my episodes live. I'm going to do a live episode, right? I think sometimes your bets need to be audacious. They need to be big. for you to get excited about them. If I had made that bet that I was only going to make a 5-episode podcast, I don't know if I'd still be doing it. The fact that I promised 50 made me able to sort of feel like each episode didn't have to be perfect because I was promising more and more. And the last thing I'll say about that, and this is sort of what I'm thinking about as I go into year 4, is how can I keep a high quality podcast that I'm proud of that serves my personal mission, right? While also spending time on the things that are truly in my zone of excellence. So my first 50 episodes, I edited all by myself. That was a mistake. It was a necessary mistake given the fact that financially that was the only way to make it work. But had I still had to be editing all those episodes, I don't think the podcast would still exist. So what's my zone of excellence in the sense that I have one? I think it's finding the right people and asking them the right questions and trying to build a library week by week, month by month, year by year that provides value to my audience. Anything that doesn't serve that purpose should be done by somebody else. And so I'm really trying to do that. It's very hard for me. I was always the person in private practice who was like, I'll handle everything because then I have control. Like I was the guy in the group project that tried to do every piece of the project because I couldn't give up control. And one of the things that I'm learning from the podcast project that frankly is coming into other parts of my life is giving up control opens up new opportunities, which get me excited.
I imagine that graduating magna cum laude, there was some from Princeton, that there's some element of control that definitely worked in your favor. So I'll just a subtle flex on your behalf for that.
Deal.
It's really cool how you have this like analysis that you've provided in the sense like, how do I want to manage my time and still be effective? Mm-hmm. Right. And you want to focus on the things that matter to you while adding value. And, you know, for me personally, that's also something that I deal with, right? Like week over week, it has to get better. Every single episode, I'm thinking, can I ask a more substantive question? Can I enhance the audio, the video, the content on YouTube? What's another medium to help this thing grow so it reaches more people? So maybe I could align the right theme, purpose, whatever it is with the show. Because right now it's about high performers that are overcoming obstacles and sharing their insights. And it's kind of a different take on How I Lawyer in the sense that the guest is vast. In 1 second, which not to say the opposite of yours, what I mean is like I'll have a diversity in the form of like here's an author, here's a Paralympic athlete, here is a podcaster, also full-time attorney and professor at an incredible institution. Like there is a wide array of individuals who don't have this singular focus or expertise that doesn't limit their view of the world.
Sure.
And I think specifically with the type of audience that you have, they're at a very malleable state, right? Like they're out there trying to figure out who they are. And so giving them the how helps them once they understand their why. Mm-hmm. And you've articulated your mission very clearly. So as you look to the next stage of, you know, you're out there, you're speaking with these kids or these adults and you're getting to know them and they're getting to know you. What do you see for the future of the practice of law and podcasting within that scope? Are you the nexus by which we're able to take another step and start to scale this information and make it available to everyone?
Well, I'll do as a former litigator, I'll use one of my old tools from my toolbox, which is I will answer the question I want to answer, then I promise I will answer your question. The question I want to answer before I dive in is to just validate or agree with so much of what you just said in terms of finding your North Star. You know, people like to sort of think that because I'm a professor at the law school I went to, I did some pretty good legal jobs on the way there. I found success, frankly, podcasting, that all of that meant that this was all some grand plan that I had planned in advance. And it was like, check, check, check. And in reality, that's not how careers work. If I've learned anything from the 125 episodes so far of the podcast, it's that rarely does the career make sense looking forwards. It only makes sense looking backwards, right? It's the LinkedInification of the professional world that we see people, and each time a job ends, another job begins, and that looks like it was planned and is natural. And often it's just an outgrowth of that prior experience. And for me, it's been a journey of figuring out what are the things that I like and what are the things that I am good at and what are the things that let me provide the values that I care about. And if you had told me that like running a legal podcast was how I was going to do that 15 years ago, I would have said you were crazy. Like it just doesn't make sense. But each step is an outgrowth of the step before it. To more directly answer your question about podcasting and the law, I think that the legal profession, it's always growing, kind of like the law itself. It's an organic living being that changes over time. One of the great parts about the legal profession is it needs to be responsive to changes in society, right? Because lawyers are really just people who are organizing and strategizing and sitting around society as change happens. And we happen to be at a moment, I think, where there's more change than certain other moments in time. There are generational changes, there are political changes, there are technological changes. And as a result, the legal profession is changing along with it. And the legal profession is leading some of that change, and the legal profession is behind at responding to some of that change. Podcasting, and if I sort of zoom out a little bit more, content creation more generally, I think is going to increasingly become a part of how lawyers learn to practice law and how lawyers practice law. So if you go back to what I said a little bit earlier, right, law was traditionally taught in an apprenticeship model. One lawyer took you under their wing. There was no law school. They took you under your wing. You took the bar exam and one day you woke up and you were a lawyer and you had their clients and everything else. And we don't have that anymore, right? We have a professionalization of legal education, which is my day job and I think is actually wonderful for a lot of reasons. But I think the way we get the sort of informal mentorship, the informal learning, the learning that happens at a greater speed because of the speed of technology and media and everything else, that's going to come from lawyers going out there and sharing about what it's like to be them and do their job. And so my hope is that people will become more open about their professional lives, which will help the next generation become better lawyers. I really believe to my core that making our profession better, smarter, more diverse, more interesting, more interdisciplinary is better for our society, right? And as a result, I get to try to push that movement forward every week in my teaching and every week on my podcast. And so ultimately, my hope is that I'm not the only legal content creator out there. My hope is that we can all give back to the profession by being a little bit more open publicly. And then the last thing I'll say on it is law was practiced very geographically for so long, right? Your local bar association was how you got clients and how you found other lawyers. And that's just not how the world works in the 21st century. And so while it's important to find those people who share geography with you, my hope is that the internet and sort of asynchronous communication and remote communication will allow people to connect with other lawyers and other people in the profession who might not share their geography, but might share something else very important or essential to their being. And so that's what I'm hoping.
It's funny because someone is a good podcaster doesn't necessarily make them a great guest, right? But in this conversation, I find that I've learned so much in just the few moments that we've gotten to hang out here, where the aspect of the law being this evolving entity, it, especially in this day and age, mm-hmm. where everything is changing so fast, and the role that artificial intelligence is going to play within our profession. I mean, totally. I know how it impacts a lot of my podcasting work, and in terms of how I go about my practice in general, it's definitely played a role in my productivity. Mm-hmm. But as you see the landscape shifting, and you know, there's just one more quote that I want to put in just because you've added, so I want to insert here just because you've added so much with the metaphors around the law and its evolution, is that law is man's attempt to define decency. And that is from, I believe I heard Morgan Freeman say it in a movie. It's based on a book. It's not coming to me. It will by the end of it. I'll Google it while we're on the conversation, but it definitely is something that I felt necessary to input into this conversation, because you're talking about this shift and the rate at which things are changing is also important to address, that we don't lose sight of that foundational element that we are looking and aiming to define decency. Shifts by state, but as a nation we have also a constitution that we have to align with, and not to lose sight of those principles, right? We talk about the originalist version of the Constitution and the interpretations around that, and how it's important to adapt and not just stick to what was, but what could be, because we're living in a much different time. And so as you look about the landscape, you know, we talked about how you have this incredible influence over the malleability of young minds. How do you see AI in your particular work, right? Legal writing. What do you see the role, if any, it's going to play as we shift to the future? Like, what are you teaching kids?
Well, I think you're so right about the decency point, right? I think that, you know, lawyers can get a really bad rap, right? Because everybody gets a representative in the law, even the people who did really bad things. And at the end of the day, everyone who is a lawyer, I think, is making a bet on the fact that ultimately truth, justice, and the American way, not to be too too crazy about it, but like, we'll win out, right? That decency isn't about choosing in advance. It's about argumentation and having agreed upon rules. There's also an element of decency in the profession itself. In my academic research, separate from my podcasting work, I've been looking at changes over the last, frankly, 400 years in the lawyer's duty of confidentiality, and how that has shifted as a result of technology. And it's been fascinating to see and go back to sort of other moments in time where we had big change, right? So, you know, not to get too deep, your listeners don't want to learn about the model rules of professional conduct, but at a high level, right, the legal profession has a set of rules that it has selected to govern itself, right? And that has changed at three or four, depending on how you look at it, times over the last 150 years of American history. In 1983, the most recent code of professional conduct was adopted by the American Bar Association. But within a very few number of years, consumer technology called into question so many of the rules, right? Just because it was 1983 and we were sitting on the precipice of mass access to email, mass access to personal computers, mass access to the internet. So this is not the first change that the legal profession has gone through. If anything, I think you're absolutely right. My view is the change is happening a little bit faster, right? So, you know, the half-life, if you will, of change is going down every time. And I think AI is just the next example of that, right? When you think how different it was to be a practicing lawyer 50 years ago, or how different it was to teach legal research and writing 50 years ago, the answer is it was really different. But, and this is the most important thing that I try to bring to my teaching, is how we come up with arguments, how we find our arguments, how we find the law, how we share the law with others may have completely changed. But our argumentation structure is frankly ancient, right? It's all based on the syllogism. It goes back thousands of years in history of how lawyers argue. Now, is AI going to help us make those arguments? I think the answer has to be yes. I'd be crazy if I said it wasn't. But we still need to learn those skills. How we teach them and how they happen might be different, but it's absolutely going to be a paradigm shift one way or the other. Email was a paradigm shift. I mean, think about talking about legal research with somebody who was a lawyer even 30 or 40 years ago, right? The idea that you, from your phone, from your kid's baseball game, could find every case and every secondary source in history, in many cases for free, would be an absurd proposition. So we've gone through changes before, and we need to look at how those changes, we went through those changes to sort of guide us. So what am I doing in my own classroom? I'm trying not to jump ahead. I'm trying not to fall behind. I'm just trying to meet the moments where it's at and try to teach my students the sort of fundamental principles that will allow them to use these tools to become more effective lawyers when they get into practice.
Meet the moment where it's at. That is a profound statement. That one's going to stay with me.
I love it.
Just because I'm big on presence in general. So I think also understanding a sign of the times and being able to recognize, I don't want to teach my students more than necessary because I don't want to inundate and overwhelm them, but rather have them walk away with something actionable that they can be ready to attack or perform in today's day and age where it matters most, to give them the tools to understand this is where you're at. And because this is where you're at, you'll be able to effectively be more prepared for whatever is coming your way next. So it's very profound, and also an immense level of self-awareness and awareness around the times. There's this concept of what makes for a great podcaster. And it takes three different things. You have to be a good interviewer, right? It's the equivalent, I'll just back up a second. It's the equivalent of the trifecta in acting. Singing, acting, dancing.
Right.
In podcasting, you have to be a good interviewer, you have to have a strong opinion, and you have to be entertaining. And so when you hear that, and when it comes to your preparation, how do you feel about it? Is there something that stands is there something that stands out to you? Because since hearing it, I'm kind of trying to shape my worldview or my perspective around podcasting in a way that's like, okay, how can I still be myself without trying too hard, find out what I'm curious about, and entertain the audience while doing all these other things simultaneously and making it look effortless?
Yeah, I mean, that's a hard question. That's a big question. At its core, my response goes back to what I teach first-year legal writing students the moment they walk into my classroom, which is, most of these people have been incredibly successful their whole life. Most of them are gifted writers. Most of them have had incredible experiences, frankly, that I haven't had and will never have. And they come into my classroom, and what am I to give them, right? What's the gift that I'm trying to give them? The gift, as I said, is like the basics, right? Some foundational principles that will allow them to enter our profession and practice. And the number one skill that I want them to leave my classroom with is that when you are communicating in any form, the most important thing is your audience's expectations. Audience, 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 audience. And everything we do is in service of that audience. So if you don't know who your audience is, and you don't know what your audience expects, you're by definition not going to be as successful, right? I think about that to sort of answer your question about podcasting as well, right? It's audience driven. Now, all of that said, right, being a good interviewer means being a good listener. But being a good interviewer also means really knowing your audience, right? I think the reason my podcast works for my avatar audience, which is law students and people in their first 5 years of practice, is because
this episode is brought to you by Slate Milk. Slate Milk is a protein chocolate drink that gives you all the necessary energy after you have finished a hard training session, or also serves as an awesome snack, whether it's hot or cold. I commute 2 hours a day to my job, and every single day after I train, I'm looking for a quick
snack or post-workout drink that I don't have to spend time making. So I go into my fridge, I take out my slate, and I hit the road as fast as I can and enjoy my drink on the way to work. That's the way that I personally like to enjoy it, because there's so many different flavors. So in the morning, the mocha flavor with the caffeine definitely hits. I can also recommend you check out their other flavors. It is a phenomenal brand. They are the number one partner of the UFC. You can actually go to their website, slatemilk.com, type in the code INSPIRED for 10% off your first order. So go ahead, type in the code INSPIRED at slatemilk.com to get 10% off your first order today. This episode is brought to you by ProMix. ProMix is an energy supplement brand that provides a whole plethora of different products, from protein cereal bars to protein shakes, probiotic, prebiotic, deep load products, along with electrolytes, and the list goes on. ProMix is the supplement that I go to for all of my health needs. It has been a game changer for me over the last few months. After the 1,000 pull-up challenge, my immune system was compromised in ways that were super uncomfortable. I kept getting sick, and I knew I needed to level up my game. I didn't place enough value on supplements, but I do now. I spent some time, I did my research, and ProMix is the brand that I decided to work with because my immune system is finally in check. So go check out ProMix.com and type in the code INSIDETHEINSPIRED to get 20% off your first order today. That's right. Go to ProMix.com to get 20% off your first order today with the code INSIDETHEINSPIRED.
I live that every single day with my students, right? I have the benefit of having practiced myself and being 10 or 15 years out of law school and have a lot of experience, but I also get to hear every single day what my students are thinking about, and I try to reflect that through my questions. So it's not just about me. I am sort of a steward of my audience's questions, right? Having an opinion is what is your purpose, which is the other thing we teach in legal writing. Like, what's the goal, right? So I've had interviews where I may disagree fundamentally with the approach recommended by the person, right? So what's my job in that moment? My job is not to stop them, right? Because I'm sharing their story, but my job is to interject and try to reflect. The people who listen to my podcast a lot tend to say either they listen to my reflections because it helps them organize what the people just said, or when I get negative feedback, it's that I reflect too much. And in some ways, I'm okay with that, right? As I said, you don't have to listen to my podcast. And if you listen, you don't have to listen to every episode, because it's also about me and who I am, and it's authentic to me and my person and my North Star and my purpose. The entertainment piece meets those two together, right? Purpose and audience. And I am not a comedian. I don't try to be a comedian. My brother is a Hollywood producer and is a very accomplished comedian on the side, not in the formal sense, but in the informal sense. He's the family, he's the person in the family who makes everybody laugh. I'm the nerd of the family. But entertainment doesn't necessarily mean trying to be what your audience wants you to be. It's recognizing that I found an audience that I can provide value to. So entertainment, as I think about it, is just value creation. And you can provide that in tons of different ways. And if it's not my way, I hope someone else will pick up the slack, right? All these people who do legal TikTok. I tried to do TikTok. I did 3 TikToks. And I was like, you know what? This is not in my zone of excellence, because to entertain for that medium is further out of my comfort zone. The last thing I'll say about interviewing is I feel like I'm a decent interviewer because I grew up talking to adults. My mom is a rabbi, one of the first 50 women rabbis in the world in history. And I spent my entire life talking to adults as a child about what they did, because I was sitting in a temple social hall and everyone wanted to talk to me because I was the rabbi's son. And so at 8 years old, I got really good at asking questions like, "Oh, Mr. Smith, how is your job at the GAO? And in some ways, that in the moment, I didn't realize I was learning a skill, but it's a skill that I have 20 plus years more head start practicing than most other people, or 30 more years, frankly. And so it's finding those skills that you don't really know exist and really using them and exploiting them to the best of your ability.
That was an awesome breakdown. I got to say, because in terms of reflecting, I don't think I can reflect much that would add more value than you just offered, because you have this incredible awareness around the value that you want to bring to your audience. You're clear on your mission. You're clear on your purpose. You understand your opinion and perspective. And then it just becomes about action, right?
And yeah, but 100%. But I don't want to make it sound like it's not hard, right? And
we all know it's hard.
It's hard. It's hard. And it takes a humility and an empathy that I don't always show, right? And I often feel like I am not serving my audience to the best of my ability, or I'm choosing one task instead of another and making some failure by that choice. But the more you talk about it and the more you do it relationally, at least for me, the clearer my perspective gets. So it goes back to an earlier question that you asked me about what did I learn from all of this? And I'm hearing myself as I'm thinking about that question again. One thing is I gained a wider perspective because I talked to more people. But I think in many ways, it's made me clearer on my values and my why. Mm. So by building that wider perspective, I have gotten a lot more clear on what matters to me. It's then the action's the hard part, and the action can change. And action, as you know, right, you always want it to be better. And so I'm already thinking, how can I make the podcast better in 2024? How can I be a better parent in 2024? How can I be better to myself in 2024? And that's hard. And especially as a perfectionist, that can be a real challenge. And it's something that we're all working through.
Something that we talk a lot about on this podcast is values. Those are the values of the North Star and the compass by which you will accomplish whatever your mission is.
Couldn't agree more.
And as a new parent, my wife and I, we were at dinner recently and we started talking about what values we want to embody for our children so we can stick to those as a contract and a doctrine for ourselves. And then hopefully something that allows them to grow into high valuing, special contributing members of society that mm-hmm. can also take care of themselves and take care of others. You know, it's important. So as we round this thing out, there's one or two more questions I want to ask.
Sure, please.
When it comes to your interviews, there's this focus on, we talked about the diverse array, even though there's a singular focus on practicing law, there's a diverse array of guests in the Senate. One's in media and entertainment, one's in aviation, one's in defense, one's in plant. There's this wide array. So do you find that when you're preparing, if at all, that you take more of an issue-based focus or a person-based focus? Or is there kind of that combination of the two?
That is only a great question that a podcaster could ask. That's one of the things that's frankly, now that you say it, has changed about my preparation and my approach to the podcast. When I started, I envisioned a podcast where, you know, I'd have one appellate lawyer, one insurance lawyer, one sports lawyer as a way of showing sort of being the representative of that practice area. I have really moved away from that. And instead, that person is who I'm highlighting and their story is who I'm highlighting. So even if it's an aviation lawyer, right, I'm asking questions that I think are relevant, again, to my purpose and my audience, right, that are going to apply regardless. So that's why I said each episode in my mind has three acts: what you do, why you do it, and how you do it well, different lengths depending on that person in the episode. And I think the what you do piece is only a piece. It's only one part of the episode. And the how you do it well piece and why you do it, those pieces are really person-based. And you better believe, like, I'm a big believer in preparation. I think good lawyers, like, we come from preparation and then we learn how to do it again. And when I'm preparing, what I'm trying to do is figure out how can I amplify the best parts of this person's story. And that takes listening, that takes research. And frankly, that takes sometimes asking the same question three different ways because I don't know where the conversation's going. At the same time, I tell people all the time, it's not a deposition, right? When I was in practice and I was taking depositions, so for anybody who's never taken a deposition before, federal court, 7 hours of questions on video. And as a, if you're a good lawyer, you have an outline of every question you want to ask and every document you want to show the witness. You have to listen and you have to be flexible, but at its core, you're prepping 5 of those 7 hours in advance. That's not how you're, I don't think that's how you make a good podcast. You need to ask open-ended questions, you need to listen, and then you need to be able and willing to sort of follow the rabbit hole. And worst case scenario, you interview the person again. Like, it's not the end of the world. We get what we get to, and hopefully we provide a little value while people are doing the dishes or mowing their lawn or walking to school, and then we move on to the next episode.
Is there a group or a few different individuals on your mental board of advisors or the different role models that you look to when it comes to podcasting in general? I mean, I'll just speak from my own experience for a second. Like, it kind of shifts based on who I'm listening to. Sometimes it'll be, you know, over the week, I've been watching a lot of Deal Book by Andrew Sorkin. I watched a few of those interviews and watching his mannerisms and the caliber of his questions, considering the high caliber of his guests, right? You're talking about like executives of publicly traded companies and, you know, richest man in the world at the time of he's the richest man in the world, because that shifts on a annual basis. I know, you know, when it comes to podcasting, there's a few I listen to, whether it's Chris Williamson. I started off with Bill Simmons and Joe Rogan, and then eventually it kind of shifted more Patrick Bet-David and all these, you know, high achieving individuals with a dense curiosity and a strong caliber of guest. I'm curious what your inputs look like.
Yeah, it's funny. Before I started podcasting, I was not really a podcast listener. I sort of fell into this a little bit. I've started listening to more podcasts now that I'm in the podcast space, and I found incredible joy from them, especially now that I listen at 2 or 3x speed. I find incredible value from that. My wife can't handle it. She thinks it sounds like gobbledygook, and it kind of does, but I really love it. Some of my interview influencers or influences, Tim Ferriss. I've been reading Tim Ferriss since I, you know, there's, I don't think a lot of like people who end up becoming law professors are huge Tim Ferriss fans who read 4-Hour Work Week. But I did when I was, even before I was a practicing lawyer. So, you know, he's one of my influences. I used to listen to and still do listen to Guy Raz and the How I Built This podcast, which sort of has echoes to the How I Lawyer podcast.
100%.
And then the other person who I'm a huge fan of, and the funny part is we teach at the same university, but he teaches computer science, and I doubt we'll ever meet. I hope we do someday, is a guy named Cal Newport. So if you've never listened to Cal Newport, Cal Newport is a really fascinating guy. We don't agree on everything. That's an understatement, but he is an incredibly smart, incredibly thoughtful thought leader, for lack of a better word, about basically doing our best work. That's sort of his niche. And as I said, he's a computer science professor, but he also writes books. And he also has a podcast called Deep Thoughts with Cal Newport. And I'm a regular listener to her. I don't miss that podcast. His style is very different from mine. It's much more scripted. He makes more jokes. He's a little bit more, he entertains by pushing the envelope a little bit. That's not my style. But to give you a sense of how into Cal Newport I am, I was reading his books on how to do well in high school when I had already graduated college. Wow. Just because I think his mindsets are just money. They're fantastic. And so I'm a big Cal Newport fan.
So there's a question that I pose to all my guests that I'm not going to pose to you. If the future version of yourself from 10 years from now were to fly in and offer you some advice, assuming he's in that ideal spot, if he were to offer you some advice in order to get there, what do you think he would say to you?
Great question. I'm a lawyer, so I'm going to give you three. I'm going to go in threes. So the first thing is to slow down, right? I am an idea-driven person, and as a result, I'm really good at starting things and I'm not always great at finishing them. And frankly, I'm really good at starting things that I probably never should have started by giving myself a little distance. So I'm hoping that person flies in and tells me you got better at slowing down. The second is to keep taking audacious goals on. And that's really important to me also. I think some of the things that I'm most proud of were the things where there was no exact model ahead of me, but I felt like I was bringing lots of different pieces of me to them and setting audacious goals in public. And number three, and this is the most important, frankly, is that I always want to be remembered in the long term for the father that I am. And I'm lucky. My father was an incredibly present part of my life, even though he was a very high-powered executive and he worked a lot, but I never saw that side of him. He almost did it effortlessly. It's harder. It's even more amazing now that I have to be a dad and work that how he did it. But that's what I want to be remembered by. And I hope 10 years from now, that person swoops in and says, you did that, because being a present father is not easy. It's the hardest job I've ever had by far. I think we are at a great moment where dads can do almost everything and frankly can do everything. And we should, and we need to sort of create a new path for being dads. And so that's the thing that I work on and I think about a lot and I hope to continue working on. I'm certainly not perfect, but I'm certainly going to try.
Ladies and gentlemen, Professor Jonah Perlin, thank you so much for coming on the show. Please let everyone know where they can keep up with your journey.
For sure. Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been fun chatting, and finding sort of a kindred spirit in this world is always fun. And this is what I mean by like making connection over the internet. Like, the chances that our paths would have crossed and that we could have this conversation and that maybe somebody else would listen to it, even 5 or 10 years ago, was basically zero. So how cool is it that we can do this on a Friday afternoon before we both run to our next thing? People can find me if you want to follow a nerdy legal writing professor who has lots of thoughts about the legal profession. They can follow me on LinkedIn, Jonah Perlin. I think I'm the only one. I'm still on Twitter X for the moment at Jonah Perlin, although I'm there a little bit less than I was in the beginning. And then the How I Lawyer podcast, which you can find anywhere you can get podcasts, or howilawyer.com.
Thank you so much, man.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.